It's that time of year again, and your nice hosts take a few weeks off from new episodes. But before we do, we pick a few of our favorites from the past year to heat up in the microwave and serve to you while we're on hiatus. Ding! In previous years, each of us pick a few episodes and explain why we picked them. But this year, I picked them all, when Stephen and Mark weren't paying attention. Haha. It is what happened. Yeah, this week's nice replay is episode 224, To Whom It May Concern, Ethical Consumption. Grind. That's a lot. That's because it's a roundtable, so we went through a lot of topics. And it was originally published on July 9th, 2021. I think this is one of the episodes when we had Holly on, right?
Yeah.
So that alone is a reason to listen to it again.
Oh my gosh, Holly's so smart.
Yeah, and Holly, this is Holly's topic.
Yeah.
A lot of times we have Holly on as a guest host because, like, who doesn't want to have a better day?
Absolutely.
And she just lightens up the show and, like, brings a lot of energy to it and contributes a lot to our discussions. Mm-hmm. But this time she brought in a whole topic.
Yeah.
And
she put on a whole bunch of research. She sent me this giant list of things she wanted to talk about. I was like, oh, dang, this is way more than we ever prepared.
Efficient use of time.
I was trying to speed through the intro because I want to get to the main event. Holly. Oh,
Holly's here.
Whoa. Hi. Hey. Me, Holly.
Longtime listeners will remember Holly Harrison, perhaps the show's best friend, has returned once again to brighten our doorstep.
Oh, no. It comes with no expectations. Don't worry.
No,
do I have to be in your wedding? I don't know why that's...
The show isn't dating... Well, no,
the show does have a boyfriend,
someone.
Dylan.
Yeah.
That's true.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, he's never, you know, put a ring on it yet, so we're waiting on that, Dylan. Yeah. Where's that? Where's the ring?
Yeah.
Where's the ring?
Yeah, I don't know why, instead of, like, heartily accepting that compliment, I first thought of, like, what I would need to provide and how this
duties?
Would draw on me. I'm like, oh, please don't say that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when the show is feeling down, show up with pizza or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, for listeners who haven't heard you, tell them a little bit about yourself.
I'm Holly. Oh, I should have been more prepared for this. I am a writer and comms person for hire, who plays a lot of games. I've worked in games, and I think and post about games on the internet.
And one of those places is your social media feed, Lobby.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on Instagram, a place where there aren't many games, and so I don't know why I'm there instead of on Twitter. It's at Join Lobby. Come for the hot takes, stay for the art of other people that I share in stories.
Yes.
Cool. And Holly, you're not just here to brighten our doorstep, although you were here for that. You also brought a topic with you.
I did.
Which is great for two reasons. One, it's an incredible topic. People are going to love it. Mm-hmm. Just setting the standards, setting expectations now. I know you don't like that. And second is, I was supposed to come up with a topic for today's episode, and I don't have to. So I'm especially excited about this.
You should have seen him when we came up with the idea for you to come. He's like, yes, yes, yes.
Right. Good. Yeah, that's you have to come up with a lot of topics.
Yeah.
In your life.
You do.
Now I can see why getting a week off feels great.
I mean, Holly, you're talking about taking notes or having notes earlier, but like listeners should know, Holly has many notes, both digital and handwritten.
I don't. I have one page on an A5 size note.
I mean, the standards that we set, I think that's pretty good.
Observe the number of pages in front of Steven and Mark and myself.
I mean,
we've got a laptop.
Yeah.
I was too lazy
to
plug in my tablet before I left. So I just shoved. I have a lot of office supplies because I do freelance work for two different office supply companies. So I have more paper than I know what to do with. So I'm always I just grabbed this like out of the bag. It's one of 600 notebooks that have been thrust upon me and I'm down. I'm always ready.
Yeah. But before we get into our topics for today, because we have also another one from Steven that's great as well, just not to have you feel left out. We have some little meta to talk about the show. Ellen, you have news on your PC, right?
I thought I had the second topic.
What? Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
You don't even have to worry about it.
I told you, I did not have to prepare today.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so a couple months, episodes, a while back, I shared my plans for this year, which were to, you know, work on building my new PC, and then kind of got into looking at it, and it's like, well, it's a really terrible year to build a new PC. And so I kind of had been putting it off a little bit until I figured out what to do. And now I get to put it off forever because my husband surprised me with a new laptop for my birthday.
Hey.
So my birthday was a while ago, but he, you know, it took him some time to get everything like put together and, you know, shipped to us. So he got me an Alienware M15R4, which is a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
Which I don't particularly like.
The numbers?
Well, I like those numbers
because
of what it means, right? But like learning what all the different numbers mean when it comes to hardware is really frustrating because like I feel like you have to follow a chain of you have to follow a product for a while before you really understand like, well, there's the 3060 and then there's the 3070, but the 3090.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't actually know what that if you haven't been following that for a while, it's just numbers and it means nothing.
Yep.
It's kind of like what math class was for me a lot. It's just, here's a random problem in a book that has no meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And until you actually have like a meaningful problem to apply those numbers to, it just kind of filters out of your brain and it just becomes kind of muckety muck.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I care about the numbers on my laptop. It's really cool. And it's really neat and I'm really excited. And Steam was the second thing I installed, I think.
Yep.
And, yep.
Wait, what was the first thing? A browser.
It was, yeah, browser. It was, I'm not using Edge. I admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been playing Grease, G-R-I-S, Grease.
Every time Grease? People say the name, I'm like, the song, the movie?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was like, oh, what's
No, that's Grease? Not the one that you want.
Yeah.
The country?
I see what you did there, Mark.
Grease. The colors one. The colory platformer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty great because the music is fantastic and it's all environmental and it runs so smooth.
Yeah. Ooh. We talked about that game a bunch on the show, including pretty recently.
Yeah.
And you hadn't played it yet. So this is your first time playing it, right?
Yeah, it's my first time playing it. So I'm playing it and it's not a very long game, so it won't take me very much time to get through. And then I will post on Twitter for what I should play next.
Cool.
Hey.
So that's that. That's my computer news.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned like product numbers and like what being annoyed at having to find out what they mean. I am drowning in that right now because, well, Ellen has correctly, or rather her husband has helped her correctly abandon the search to build a PC at this worst time in history to build one.
Yeah.
I am building one and I'm headlong into it. And not only am I building one, I'm building one with like rare parts and like, it's hard to find a graphics card, but like it's hard for the computer I'm building to find a motherboard. And so, because I'm building a server class workstation that to replace my 7-year-old monster, and it like the processors are insane. Like the numbers are. And so there's some products that do this where the last number, like the ones digit, is the generational digit.
Oh,
and so you have to kind of like, oh wait a minute. So the 7,421 is less powerful than the 7,124.
What?
Or something.
That's not how base 10 works.
By like three generations or whatever. And it's you have to not think of them as numbers. You need to think of them as like labels and nothing else.
It's like different language for each manufacturer.
It's so
different.
It's unnecessary. Yeah.
And you know, even like the NVIDIA graphics cards where the you know, it's somewhat sensible.
Yeah.
It stops at like 80 is the high end and then 90 is like the super high end. Like why? Like why is it 89? Why isn't it just 8 and 9?
I don't know.
Do they expect? And then they do the 3080 Ti, which is in between the it's like just call it 3085. Like what's the problem?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It makes no sense. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah.
So you in typical Mark fashion are doing that on like heroic.
Basically,
yeah. heroic.
It's just a pile of mistakes all up and down. Yeah.
this was numbers talk.
Yeah. In happier news, listeners will have heard last week my talk about Noble Engine, the game engine that I'm making for the Playdate. And in that talk, I mentioned that it's not public yet because the SDK for Playdate is not public.
Yeah.
That's still true, at least by the time we record this episode. But I have made the engine public on GitHub, so you can find it. The link will be in the show notes if you're interested in peeking around. It won't be much use to you until the Playdate SDK is public, but that should be soonish as well. And even before you can get hardware, if you've got the SDK, you can use the simulator, so you can get a lot out of it. So I'm looking for feedback on that to see where what it's missing, what it could do better, looking for bugs, stuff like that. So again, not much use to you yet, but it is public, and so and the documentation is available. So I would love for people to see, even before they get a chance to use it, like, do you understand how it works? It might be a good use case, actually, before you actually are able to.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in taking a peek at that, I'm it's new to me. I've never been a maintainer on an open source project. So it's kind of exciting, and I'm a little bit nervous about it. But I'm pretty excited. Yeah.
Ooh.
Are there numbers that go with it?
No.
I don't want to get into it.
Okay.
No. Too many numbers. I'm already confused.
Uh-huh.
Ellen, you went to the Serious Play conference?
Yeah, so I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, and it was an online conference this year. They've been doing it in person mostly since they started, but the last couple times have been online because of the pandemic. And I volunteered this year to help, and that came with the responsibility of doing some light video editing, just so they have like good recordings to share with people who attended. And that also means that I didn't get to go to a lot of sessions, but I have access to all the recordings. So I have marked all the ones that I want to do and watch, and I think I'll be just doing that this week, watching some recordings, and I'll share what I learn the next time we record.
How was the volunteer process, like, or experience rather?
You know, it was pretty good. There must have been a lot of volunteers, because, you know, they have like a technical host for each of the sessions, right? And they had like a bunch of different tracks, like healthcare and corporate and I think government/military, and this, you know, Serious Play is all about using games and game design for mainly for training purposes and educational purposes. And they had like a K-12 track and a higher ed track and things like that. So they had like a volunteer who was responsible for like starting each session, introducing each of the guests, so each of the speakers, and then like monitoring questions and things like that, and making sure the session got recorded. And they had, you know, like five or six tracks. So that's five or six volunteers. And then I don't know if those volunteers were working all 3 days of the conference, but if they weren't, then that's even more. Mm-hmm. And then they had a bunch of people helping with their recordings. And I only did the recordings for one day. So there must have been a lot of volunteers. And it went pretty well for me. It's just, you know, quick get to know you meeting. And then they sent the instructions via email, and they worked as written.
Yeah.
And
isn't always a given.
You know,
yeah.
No, it's not. And I had a couple of questions, and they were really responsive. So I think it went really well.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch all the recordings and write lots of notes in my notebook. And I'll feel like Holly when I do now.
If you need more notebooks, just hit me up.
For sure. Okay.
You've got too many of them.
I got them in every size.
Just bring me a bag the next time we... Yeah, like a paper bag, and we'll just like pass it under the table.
I mean,
table.
I'm still going to school, so I might have to, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Do you need any paper? I've got a person. Got a
Seriously, I have so many stacks of post-its.
You have post-its?
Yeah, one of the companies I'm working for is 3M. So, yep, I have a whole line of post-its, and then on the other side, I have a whole line of compostable, minimal office goods.
Okay, well.
Hey.
I'm all about those post-its, so we'll talk later.
Yeah. Behind in an alley somewhere. Yeah, it's like a
illicit pre-post-it.
Right. All right. Should we move on to the main event, which is Holly, of course. I'm sorry. I'm
Yay. All right. So I should just kick off and start talking.
Yeah.
Great.
And I will just relax for this portion of the show.
No, I really need you to contribute. So.
Fine.
So there is a saying that's a good saying for a reason, is that there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, which is abundantly true. Like, you buy an avocado and you're fueling the drug trade, and that sucks.
Yeah.
But you're also helping farmers, and it's complicated. And right. Every single purchase you can multiply this time after time after time is fraught somehow, because people are greedy. Not consumer. Well, yes, consumers, but people at the top of the companies that are making the things you need to buy are greedy.
Yes.
Full stop. But games are And like, if you follow games news at all, it's, you know, it's just like wave after wave of scandals and mm-hmm. controversies, mm-hmm. whether it's about like crunch culture at a company or just like rampant toxic harassment at a company.
Yeah.
All the way over to gamesindustry.biz does a series, or did a series, because it was Rebecca Valentine, who's, I believe, at IGN now.
Yeah.
We'll see if it gets picked up again this year. But it was about all the like SEC filings that game hardware makers have to file about whether their products use conflict minerals. So
wow.
Yeah, so okay, like yeah. you can go deep.
Real deep. Okay.
You can go, there's lots of directions to be like, oh, nothing. And I can't put my money anywhere that's good. Uh-huh. but like before I wanted to come to that conclusion, I was doing some like research at, let's say, a very reasonable hour last night. sitting up at my computer and not like on my phone with my glasses off in bed.
Right.
And found a Vogue article, so not games related, but that really summed it up pretty well. It's from a couple years ago, and the title is, "Is There Really Such a Thing as Ethical Consumerism?" Excuse me, by Maya Singer. And I screen capped, I mean, diligently took notes in an official way. like the way that Maya Singer, the writer, breaks it down is really good. So they're talking about needing a new pair of running shoes. And it goes, do I buy one brand's shoe made entirely from sea garbage, but in a sweatshop in Southeast Asia? Or do I buy from a brand with no environmental commitments that produces in a unionized factory here in the U.S.? What if the brand that produces domestically is led by a CEO with hashtag MeToo complaints? Mm. What if there's another sneaker brand that signed a deal with Colin Kaepernick? And I like Colin Kaepernick. My point is, values compete. And ethical values lose some of their charge when they're thrown into contention with with elemental shopping values like function, style, convenience, and price.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The writer pointed to some research that said something like 51% of consumers broadly say that they want their companies to be more ethical. But when it comes, like, it's not 51% of consumers who are strictly buying from places that have the best practices, because when it comes down to it, you're crushed for time. And when you do that research, you multiply that same thing over and over again across like your groceries, across your medicine, like in your games, it starts to feel like there's no right answer.
Right. Right.
Though they did, people kind of respond to polls, as citizens and like ideal citizens rather than as private consumers, which mm-hmm. kind of explains some of that. So all of this leads me down to games.
Okay. Yep.
Games are a luxury product. So yes. You get to kind of, I guess it's not quite as down to the wire, and you can,
right,
and we're also in a kind of like a golden, not a necessary. Okay. That doesn't, not a golden era of playing games, I would say. Like, there's more games than you could ever possibly finish.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you can speak with your wallet if you choose. Though that's not really the only way to get things done. So I'll just open it up with, how do you become a more ethical consumer of games? Like, what battles do you pick? Do you want to stand against crunch?
Yeah.
Do you want to stop buying games from companies that have like well-documented harassment?
Right.
Are you watching those conflict minerals?
Right. Yeah. It gets extremely complicated.
Yeah.
When you like really get, if you really start looking into these things. And I think a lot of gamers, consumers don't, it's not that they don't care. It's that they don't hear about it. They don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exhausting to think about it.
Yes, exactly.
Right, right. Yeah, like, so I don't know, is it more energy friendly to be downloading games, or is like the servers actually worse than production of the CDs and the plastic cases that it comes
right.
in?
You know, I think it's not just that. It's if I'm someone who feels that I'm living an ethical life, and I recycle, I compost, I research my sneaker companies,
mm-hmm.
but when I play games, I just want to have fun. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like the harder challenge of finding like a way to ethically buy your groceries is more approachable to people generally then finding out if they're like, you know, sort of like frivolous goods, are even though they have a greater power in those regions because they're less necessary to their lives.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say that with this, as with anything, like the main changes have to happen at the top, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. We like, it's important that we're all recycling and biking, and that's good. And like, but as we were discussing earlier, one person doing that isn't a linchpin. Right. You can set an example and make more people do that. But what needs to change is like legislation, regulation, and just companies need to lead the way. So
And in the absence of regulation, how much guilt should we feel at an individual level? Mm-hmm. Because we know it's not on our shoulders, right? I think there's been enough education recently to know that like it isn't the single consumer that is the most important thing.
Yes. I'm glad you bring that up because this reminds me of meat, eating meat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because often, like I mean,
because you're not going to stop.
No, I'm not. And my reasoning for it, I mean, it's half of it is selfish reasons. I love meat and I don't want to get rid of it. Uh-huh. But
well, it's important to recognize that. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it doesn't remove you from the conversation. You still get to have a voice, even when you admit to those.
But I also like my other reason is that like me not eating meat is not going to save the world.
Yeah,
like it has to be something that has changed, like the entire way that meat is created has to be changed in order for that to be fixed. And me not eating meat is, I guess, sort of me taking a stand on it.
Yeah,
but like I can also just decry all of those things and still eat chicken.
Yeah.
So
right, yeah, it's a little column A, column B, right?
Yeah.
So like I know when I see your standard listicle about how to be a better consumer, a more green consumer, or whatever, it's like have one meal a week without meat, and I'm like, I'm already doing that.
Yeah.
And also, but and it seems so small, and it is because like you said, it's people at the top who need to take more responsibility,
right?
But at the same time, it's like, what if everyone had one meal a week without meat? I guess that would make a difference.
Yeah.
Not just literally, but it also sets a standard, right?
It
like voting with your wallet isn't that phrase doesn't mean that you are making a difference. It's that you as a member of a class will make a difference. Like if it's not profitable to do something that is unethical, it won't be done.
Yeah.
Yes. And one part that seems to be happening across industries and in games too is that public outcry does make a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you'll take Ubisoft, for example. Ubisoft has a long documented history of just really nasty, toxic culture. And that was known within the company. That was known to people in HR who were essentially covering it up. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until that leaked out and everyone flipped that Ubisoft was like, okay, we'll make some changes.
Yeah, right.
And that applies elsewhere too. And it makes a big difference when big companies change a standard. It sounded like things internally didn't feel like they were changing that much, but the list that they produced of all the things they wanted to change did look really good to their credit.
Yeah.
But like if all these big companies start being really public about what they're doing to either change their cultures, really like change their culture of like toxicity or crunch or what they're doing to be more ethical overall, paying their employees better. If all of these things are really public and known, other big companies will follow suit is the idea. If everyone commits to like, okay, we're going to stop doing X and it starts at EA or something, then hopefully all the little guys will follow. You see that a little bit with like loot boxes. Everyone kind of turned on loot boxes as a gambling mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes more companies to be like, you know, we've figured out how to make our games addictive, but we see that maybe that's not great. Maybe we should all agree that we shouldn't be doing that.
Right. The PR hit finally was enough to impact, if not the bottom line, like projections out to the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? If EA becomes the company that only makes games with loot boxes, then that even though that remains profitable, that might be now in the environment that has been set. Maybe that means we won't be able to attract talent. Maybe we won't have attractive products. And so whether we can make them addictive, but that's only once we have the customer. So like, I think there's a lot of calculations to go. I think that's a case where it's like, I think it's pretty crass, the calculations that go into making those changes.
Yeah.
But who cares if progress gets made, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's and the worst part of many worst parts is that it's not hard for companies to make big changes like this.
Yeah.
They just need the outcry and the push to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like to that point, I think we all have we all have roles to play. So let's say your pet project is, I don't want to see this is so silly to phrase it like a pet project. Let's say your pet project is getting people livable wages. Uh-huh. So like when the CEO of a company can essentially buy the moon and mm-hmm. their like devs are living in their cars, that's a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't just like say, I'm not going to buy games anymore from Evil Corp. Like I'm going to speak out about not buying games from Evil Corp, and I'm going to see like if is there some kind of legislation in the works in this state for livable wages that I can speak up about and call a senator and be like, hey, you know, this really affects me because my friends at Evil Corp are really having a bad time.
Yeah.
That's impactful. So it's not just speaking with your wallet; it's speaking with your wallet and then holding places accountable.
Yeah. And I mean, those of us in the industry, I mean, it depends on like your situation and things. This isn't always an option, but like you can opt to, you know, not work or support companies. Evil Corp.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I mean, we can vote with our abilities,
our feet,
your talent, your abilities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like that is an option too. Yeah.
And it's not always. I mean, I think it's. Like Evil Corp is a handy metaphor,
yeah,
but it's not always Evil Corp.
It's yeah,
right? it's some well-meaning but you know group doing evil, like
right, and like the people at the like C-suite at Evil Corp is the problem. You still want the other folks to be able to eat,
right?
Oh yeah.
You want and that's kind of the argument that goes around when there are big critiques of just the working culture at companies. They're like, yeah, well, there's lots of good people there, and that's true. Yeah. And if you want things to be better for them, you should be part of the people who are trying to hold the C-suite at Evil Corp.
I have like a little. I think we probably are thinking along the same lines, but I feel like I have a bit of a hot take on this because I think a lot of developers tend to fall on that. Like, well, don't boycott The Last of Us Part Two. Mm-hmm. It's not because there's so many people who worked on that game.
Yeah,
and part of me is like. That's sort of giving into the like I don't know. I feel like boycott Last of Us Part Two.
Yeah, like they're not waiting.
Like half those devs are getting fired anyway because
got their paycheck.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Last of Us Part Two success doesn't determine whether they've been paid for their work on The Last of Us Part Two. Hopefully,
yeah.
Well, I mean, it's sometimes it is, but like it's like the, it's like this is in an example where I do feel trapped into making an unethical choice. Is like tipping service workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like it's one of my most strongest ideological, like political beliefs is that tipping is regressive and sexist and racist, and it needs to be replaced with livable wages. Like mm-hmm. the entire system promotes, it's bad for the customer, it's bad for, it's there's nothing good about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't bring myself to not tip as a measure of action, even though it might make a difference in, you know, if enough people did it. I can't cross that
line. Right, because those people are already making minimum wage and they can't. Yeah.
It's so specific. My action is so close to it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It feels like. So I wish I could, in a way, do that, but I feel that, again, competing interests, competing values, right? But in the case of boycotting The Last of Us Part Two, like, or not playing a Kojima game because, maybe he's not as sexist as he used to be, but he's still pretty sexist. Like,
for 2021, it's still pretty rough.
I feel like it's pretty easy for me to say, I will stand up for those values. And and I have to admit, it's because it's kind of easy for me.
Yeah.
I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
But so I take some umbrage with people who are like, it won't make a difference. And that's the reason they don't bother.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting when you were talking about like not, like you feel compelled to tip, even though you know systematically, like it's not a healthy system.
Yeah.
And that is really built into this like psychological wiring we have that, things that are, you know, people that are immediately in front of us are more easily become part of the tribe than these abstract humans somewhere else, right? So when it absolutely makes sense that it would be difficult not to tip. I feel the same way about the system of tipping, and I never not tip. I never not tip superfluously, like always do, because I'm dealing, at that point, the decision is about, what impact do I have on this individual?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Rather than how do I impact the system overall?
Yeah.
And I feel like I was going to tie that back to games and I forgot. So I'm going to look at Holly.
Well, Ellen, maybe you were getting to the point where, it's like I was saying, it's easier to do that with games. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're saying it actually is very similar. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's easier for me and others to do that with games is because I'm not literally handing my credit card to that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, as Holly, you were saying, like, their work, when the game is released and you are faced with the decision, do I purchase this game or do I not purchase this game? They, most cases, the people who have worked on the game have already done the work and they've already been compensated for the mm-hmm. game is out.
Yeah.
Right. The game is finished. That's another question for another episode.
Yeah.
but you know that you're not you don't have a direct influence on whether they got paid for that work. What you are influencing with your decision in a small way is whether the same structures will be used to create a game down the future.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Down the road.
Yeah. You're proving whether or not Crunch is profitable.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. Maybe your actions there are actually. Like, not buying Last of Us Part 2 might actually make more of a difference than not tipping somebody at Applebee's. Like, not only is it easier to do, it actually, that your individual action is a slightly larger weight.
Yeah, you're actually, like, pointing, you're aiming at the right people at that point, rather than, like, the server who can't help that they're paid $3 an hour.
Yeah,
right,
right. I agree with all of these points. Uh-huh. I didn't buy Last of Us Part 2 because I mean
listeners who like played and enjoyed the hell out of that game, which is very good. Like I hope that this doesn't feel as an indictment, but maybe it is a little bit of it. Like part of standing up for it is to, but I want to be careful to like I'm not getting on anybody's case individually.
And that's what I was going to bring up is like we're talking about really well. And I'm going to argue The Last of Us Part 2 is not a really good game, but that's me.
Yeah.
But like, if you're really interested in a game, like if I discovered that Super Smash Brothers Ultimate was developed in sweatshop sort of situation or something like that, I would.
Well, you think Sakurai is not overworked?
Don't. Oh no, he. The impression I get is he does that to himself.
Okay, okay.
I don't appreciate either, but I've done some serious soul searching on some of these things. Well, actually, Smash is a good example because, like, I don't remember if I talked about it on the show before, but like, Smash went through a whole the competitive community went through like a whole. I will link to something in it because I don't want to describe it exactly. But anyways, it was very bad. And I like was very like conflicted and like me, I haven't really played Super Smash Brothers much since because like, I feel very conflicted. Like if I'm playing the game and watching the tournaments and stuff, am I supporting this kind of behavior? I know that they did some work to like fix some of that, but I know that not a lot of the work that needs to get done has gotten done and things like that. So I'm like, should I even be a part of this community? Do I feel welcome here? I don't know if this is good, for me to be a part of. But I really love Super Smash Brothers. So
yeah, the point is, and it can feel like this when you're trying to take any stand on anything. Yeah. Say like you want to consume more like diverse and feminist TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like you like all your faves are problematic. Nothing's like very few things are going to meet the bar, and it can send you into a spiral of like nothing's good.
Yep.
I can't enjoy things.
Yeah.
And like that's part of the backlash, which is silly because you can enjoy things. But, you know, you should be able to, like, pick your battles, pick what's super important to you, like, take a hard stance on, like, if I hear that this company did crunch, or, like, if I see if this small company has a lot of turnover and that seems really suspicious to me, no more games from them. Or, like, I really want to play this game, but I do feel like I'm compelled to speak out a little bit about what's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Which was something I was going to mention, speaking of Ubisoft, when Assassin's Creed Valhalla came out, sometime last year, I just like went through as many reviews of the game as I could find to see how many of them mentioned the like very recent surge of stories and allegations about their like really bad culture.
Yeah.
And it was like I just fit as many as I could in a tweet, and of like 14 different reviews that I read, four of them mentioned the like conditions the game was made in, and 10 of them didn't, which we know from like IGN recently publishing and then pulling down something about like resources for Palestine that like reporters don't get a final say on those things. And it's very possible that they're putting it forward and they're cutting it because the the outlets have relationships with people at these companies, right. or yeah. the reporter has a relationship with a PR person, and it's not necessarily like dirty, like, oh, I won't mention that like bad thing that happened at Ubisoft. Right. It's it's like, this is my friend and I don't want to tear them down.
Yeah.
But that's part of the that's part of the speaking truth to power thing too. Like it can be a mass of tweets, and it can also be for people who are less don't have their like finger on the pulse of what's happening in game news all the time. It can be helpful if you are the kind of person who looks at a review to pull up that review, see like, this is what's fun about the game, this is what doesn't work about the game, and here are the conditions this game was made in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there's, you need to know that people crunched really hard for this, like that their company has XYZ problems, and they're like funding conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo by using the tin from there.
Right.
That's the deepest cut. Like, I don't think anyone but gamesindustry.biz is going to be doing that. But right. I think it's important that I think media has a part to play there too.
Well, and as a consumer, like you can do that work too. That acknowledgement that like there are problematic things in this media that you're consuming. And even though you are consuming it, like I think it's important to recognize that these issues exist. With the creation
don't wait for Polygon to devote a paragraph to it in the review. Like, assume that's a topic for every game, and it's not that big a burden to just like check on it yourself.
Yeah,
you know, and then there may not be information out there, and then maybe you feel comfortable making a decision in ignorance, and that's okay sometimes, because we definitely are in that situation all the time as consumers. But like, don't wait for it to become a big viral topic.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know about you. But I have more games than I have hours in a day, and more games than I have money in my wallet. So like it's not hard for me to be. I bought and played Last of Us Part Two, knowing I know because I love that franchise. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like it's also not hard for me to like this is less of this is more narrative than like strict like. Ethics, mm-hmm, but
sure.
I try not to play games that don't have a like diverse crew behind them, mm-hmm, or in the game.
Yeah.
Like as the face of the game. If you have like no female characters or no characters of color in your game, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And at this point in the world of making games, that's easy for me. That means I miss a lot of big titles.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a huge backlog of cool indies that are ready for my time and my devotion and my excitement.
Yeah.
That like I can skip
it's,
Ubisoft's
It's good
most
you bring
recent.
That up, because I think that touches, I mean, it's very related. It's very on point to what we've been discussing, but it also veers into something a little bit adjacent, which is like ethical art or ethical narrative. Like what do you want to see? What stories do you want to see in games told?
Yeah.
And that's something where I feel pretty strongly about, where I tend to, like, as I've gotten older, I'm much less tolerant of games with realistic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Basically not because I actually find anything particularly wrong with it. It's just, I want less of it.
Yeah.
Like I want fewer, I'm perfectly, I mean, there's the military shooter can survive in my view. I know people have different opinions on that, but I don't want as many of them as there are. And when I say military shooter, I'm including things like PUBG, like things where you like run around with an AK. Like that's the kind of game where it's like, we can have them, but maybe we can have fewer of them. And mm-hmm. so
yeah.
I think about that as, and that that's not, it doesn't rise to the level necessarily of the other topics we've been talking about, but it does, it's close to it. And I do think about that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really pretty floored for a minute when I found out that, who does Call of Duty? Activision?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They have like a fund that's specifically to help veterans find, or like, I think the fund gives money to companies that specialize in like job training for veterans.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's great. Like that makes me feel better. And then I was like, oh no, this is like a publicity drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they have that and they acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But it's still just like,
Yeah, there was a, listeners may have heard of this. There was a promotional event for a game that was made some news recently, because it was journalists were taken to like a shooting range, kind of like escape room style adventure game kind of thing. And the game's developers were like, oh, let's dress up the combatants to be like the enemies in our game. And then people, the journalists who had no idea what they were going in for. But
yeah.
And this used to be a kind of thing that happened all the time in like the early 2000s. It was this kind of like these sort of like press junkets that were like little like, you know, pop-up experiences or whatever meant to get people excited. And the journalists don't have a lot of patience with that anymore. But apparently some people liked this one. But it also happened to show a lot of people in like traditional sort of like Arab attire. Yeah. All played by, you know, white people, in this sort of like role-playing thing. And it was very disconcerting and very out of time. And it was this, you know, it's a service that's, you know, like it's like a little adventure thing you could do on the weekend with anybody. But like mapped to a video game and a video game experience, it took on an even more it's the ignorance of it was the shocking part. It's like, how did they not realize that this would come off badly?
Yeah.
And not just come off badly, but like just be really harmful as a thing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I guess I could. It's just this sort of like, oh, we still have enough of that in the industry from like PR firms and game developers, especially lots of like European game developers who make like shooter games for Americans. That's a sort of a very common thing now. Mm-hmm. They tend to be woefully ignorant of a lot of the cultural context that is slowly coming into American developers, sensibilities. And so a lot of that is we'll put a link to it in the show notes, but it's one of those cases where it's like, oh yeah, we make a lot of progress, but sometimes you still see this, like how backwards some of this stuff is.
Right. Yeah. It's the same. Yeah. Anyone who makes like a game that's based on a real life war, they'll be like, well, our game's not political. I'm like, your game has Ronald Reagan in it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like literally war is political.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's amazing how quickly you like actual conditions games are being made under, and things that games depict, there is a lot of relation to those things. And part of, I think, what that we can do as individuals is to we do this in movies too. Like when, you know, there are certain films we don't go see for certain reasons. And I think games tend to be seen as like, partly because gameplay is what attracts people. Like there are a lot of players, people who don't care about what the story is. They just want to play the game.
Yeah.
And so you tend to have larger audiences for subject matter that might not be as approachable on its own or as popular on its own. And I think sometimes it's very hard to say, I don't want to play this fun ass game because it's the story bothers me. If I'm not the person who cares about story.
Yeah.
And I think I would love if more people cared about the whole package, you know, and that's something we can do, I think, is setting a standard for ourselves as consumers. And, you know, if our friends aren't playing those games for those reasons, then it's less fun for that reason, you know?
Yeah, right. Yes. Long story long, you can enjoy games.
Please enjoy games.
You can also
yeah, I know.
You can also say find reasons to say no to games and then shout them out.
Yeah. I mean, as developers, I mean, certainly us at the table and our audience, like one of the things that there's some benefit to like an audience growing in these areas is that you can make games that are better than what's out there. And like, maybe that's another thing that we can do as game developers is to like not feed into those things.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of kind of goes without saying this whole topic, but I think maybe we should say it, like, you know, like audit your own creative process, your own working situation. And that includes just if you're a single person dev or a team of four, or you are on a team of 20 or whatever, like, speak out at work, you know, if you're not part of the creative energy or creative team that dealt the story for your game, but you have a problem with it, find an avenue to make it known. See if you can have an impact, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And we've seen so much movement for the better in a lot of places, including like we didn't even touch on like accessibility. This has become thankfully a hot topic in games because it's like the basis most clear discrimination is being like, I'm putting these tiny subtitles in. Sorry for anyone who's deaf, hard of hearing. You don't get to experience this game like anyone else. And same with like, I mean, and it as environments where games are made change, the games change too.
Yeah.
Like, and that's basic things like having a more diverse group of devs is going to get you a more sensitive story, and also usually, and more diverse characters if you have a game that has characters in it. If you don't have anyone, if you cannot see a single woman working in your office, or queer person or like person of color, you're less likely to be like, you know what, that's someone we should see in our game.
Yeah,
you can really get into the minutia if you want. You can be like, I will only play games that have a diverse cast and also have full-time people who reflect that cast in the company.
Yeah.
Versus like this game wanted to bring in lots of elements that like are representative of indigenous cultures, and they just like brought in like one indigenous person to like fact check it at the end and make sure it wasn't too offensive.
Right, right. You decide what's important to you. Yeah. You don't have to grab everything from the bucket of concerns.
No.
But because you're just one person, if everyone grabs a couple of things from that bucket, then it will all move forward.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Tweet more angrily. Yeah. That's the not angrily. Poor like social media manager's job is in front, and they're not the ones making the decisions. So you can just be like, dear, to who am I concerned? Can you send this to the person who's responsible? I know it's not you. Okay, bye.
To whom it may concern. I really hope people adopt that as a way to start their angry messages. I think that really sets the standard. Like, yeah. I'm mad, but not at you.
Yeah, can you send this to your boss's boss's boss? Because they're the problem.
They should increase the Twitter limit to that amount of characters.
Yeah. We just need an acronym.
Yeah. No, it should be the same limit, but if you add that at the beginning, you get those extra characters.
Yes.
With a toggle, you check that. You want to include this at the beginning of your tweet? Yes, check.
Yeah, or you can put that as the image.
Yeah.
Mm.
See, Holly, you thought we'd end this topic on a downer.
I did. That's why I was like, don't put me second, because the end will just be like, there's no way to do good in games. Mm-hmm. Everyone go home.
Well, I think there is a good way. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of yelling.
Mm-hmm. I like yelling.
Yeah. Team yell.
Let's do the call to action. So Holly, you do this thing on Instagram, right?
Yes.
Called Lobby.
Yes, handle is at Join Lobby.
At Join Lobby. Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Thanks.
I've seen it on Twitter. But it's mostly on Instagram.
Yes, I recently locked the Twitter because I was like, hey, I don't have enough time to edit these images to repost them on Twitter.
There's a lot.
And there's not much by way of games content on Instagram, so it's nice to be filling in the tiniest little niche.
Yeah, you're carving in your own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
slowly
good.
But surely.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like a drip turning into a river.
Yes. And with that river, you become strong.
The strong river of opinions.
Yes.
On video games culture.
Yes, it's got that. And it's got really good art too.
Thank you.
It's got a good art direction.
Yeah, I'm not a designer by trade, but I get asked to do a lot of it for work things. Mm-hmm. Because anyone who, I don't know, graduated college after the year 2000 and is in any kind of like marketing-y field, you're kind of expected to be a unicorn. Mm. Well, especially if you've worked at nonprofits and startups like I have, where they're just like, you need to manage every part of this. You need to make the image for it. You need to write the copy. You need to figure out how to pay for the ad. So that's my way of saying, yes, graphics, they're important. Fonts, they're fun.
Yes.
Making stuff look nice is kind of the point of Instagram, though not really. There's lots of like great ugly meme accounts, and I share their content all the time. Yeah.
Well, you can get all that and more. Join Lobby.
Yeah, follow at Join Lobby, and I'll feed you the things you should be thinking about the news of the day.
Yeah, I don't have much of a good segue into this. It's been really hot lately, and that was a grind, and then it rained and it wasn't anymore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you want like a bad segue, you can be like, speaking of endless labor.
Things that take forever and are never finished.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of working fruitlessly.
Yeah. Topic.
Ellen's topic.
Topic grind. Mm-hmm. Okay, so why do I want to talk about grind? I really actually want to understand it. I want to talk about it because talking about things helps me understand things. And I want to understand more about grind more about my reaction to it as a player. But also from a design perspective, because I'm really interested in that too. But mainly this came up because I just want to understand why some games the grind is frustrating, and then for some games that are all still grindy have like the same design dynamic,
yeah.
The grind is not frustrating. And so I wanted to kind of delve into what grind is and why we use it and what, you know, how it makes players feel and why that might be different. And that's my topic.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, so it's just so one of those, it's one of those words where you feel like, oh yeah, everyone knows what it means, but then you actually start thinking about it, you're like, wait, what does it mean? Because the term grind is, it's used as like a description of gameplay, but it's also used as like an emotional reaction to gameplay.
Yes.
Like when you talk about a game being grindy, you know, like you're talking about the emotional experience of the game, at certain points in the game. So I Googled it like you do when you're preparing for a podcast session and, you know, found a bunch of different things. But like the main consensus that I saw in the different sources, which we will link in the show notes, is, hey, it's the gameplay loop. There was this really great thread on one of my favorite subreddits called True Gaming when they were talking about why is grinding in games so popular. And one of the responses there in a nutshell basically said, well, it's just the gameplay loop and you just do the gameplay loop over and over again. And that's just the nature of grind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that was a good place to start, but it didn't feel complete to me. So I'm going to offer my own, not on Google until this moment, definition of grind. And that is, it's the gameplay loop, but it's the gameplay loop taking the player through the same content multiple times. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In service of an in-game goal. So it's going through the same content multiple times as a means of progressing towards an in-game goal that doesn't pertain to the player's skill. And that last piece was really important to me because when I think of grind, I don't think of like, I personally don't think of like, I'm trying this boss for the 18th time. That doesn't feel grindy to me because for like, if that's the thing that's happening, it's because I have a lack of skill. And maybe people use the term grind to refer to that. But when I'm thinking about like designing a pattern into a game, I don't think of that as grind. I think of that as difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
So like Thoth, for instance, that last level on Thoth, the main like 60 some levels of Thoth, that last one with all the red parts and squiggly worms.
Yes.
If you played it, you know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
it took a lot of attempts for me to beat that level. And I mean a lot because it's a hard game and I'm not very good at Twitch reflex games. It takes a lot of work for me to be good at those things. So it took me a lot of practice to be able to beat that level.
Yeah.
But I didn't grind it out because I didn't gain anything in the game that then gave me an advantage, right? I just got better at playing it.
Right. There wasn't any progress in the game, right?
Right.
Ultimately. So like you didn't progress. The game did not progress. You progressed
as a
player.
Your character didn't get some kind of buff from doing it over and over.
Right.
It was just, you're just doing it over and over.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. You compare that to like the grind that happens in a roguelike or in World of Warcraft, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like that is literally, you're just going and you're doing your dailies and you're getting the gold so that you can pay for the thing so you can play the next part of the game.
Yeah.
Or so you can play the same part of the game better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that to me is a grind. Like that's a grind dynamic.
Yeah. So the difference then is like it's the gameplay loop, but you're not actually playing the game. Right, you're just going through the motions. Right, it's not like, you know, when you are like traversing through a level and you're beating up these guys, then beating up these guys, and beating up this boss. It's kind of the same thing over and over again. But like the difference between that, but that's a challenge. You could fail it and be set back. Whereas the grind is just sort of like, you know, you're gonna win, and you just do it over and over.
You know you're gonna progress.
Yeah, even though the mechanics are the same and it feels like sort of the same. Like I'm at this point in Ratchet and Clank now, the new one, where I'm getting to the end of the story, but I'm so close to having everything upgraded perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And who cares? Because, you know, but like, I'm like, well, I'm going to see if I can get the last bit of it. And so I go through the like arena challenges and they're all enemies that like at this point, it's not like I'm good enough at the game now and with these weapons. And so that feels like I'm enjoying that grind, but like, which is unusual for me, but it is definitely a grind where I never feel at risk of losing. Or if I did, there's no consequence. It's just to count up to the next thing or whatever.
Yep.
Whereas doing that exact same thing in the process of playing through a level, like upgrading the things as it happens, like that's not a grind, even though it's literally the identical activity.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what the poster on that thread was talking about by you know, saying that grind is the gameplay loop. Like, I think it, yeah, you're playing the game and it is a gameplay loop, but there's something different. And I think, well, I think I captured it pretty well in the definition. So if you missed that, jump back 10 seconds. But it's the fact that it has to be the same content and it's not pertaining to a block in your skill. It's basically just, it's a staircase in the middle of nowhere that you have to climb and put effort towards. You know, you're going to get towards the top. You just got to put in the time.
Yes.
And sometimes that's fun and sometimes it's not. And that's where the conversation will get really interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Like, what's at the top of that staircase? Is it just you're now done with it? Or is it the next part of the game? Because it could be
skin you really want.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Don't look at me, Holly. How you gonna call me out like that in the podcast? I invited you here.
You are a guest at this table.
And no. Though I'm not like contributing actively to this grind, I'm like, how can I help?
You did it.
Sorry, Mark. I cut you off to like make an in joke with Steven.
Well, I think the reason it's probably hard to describe is like, Ellen, like you pretty much nailed it, but there's always exceptions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's the case where it's like, yeah, it's totally grindy. It's I don't need to like a skill, but once I do this 5 times, I will get to go to the next part of the game.
Yeah.
And that's still a grind, but it's actually part of the normal progression rather than just like upping a level, which you don't need to do.
Right, right. Well, I think that you can, and that's kind of where I'm landing with this idea of grind, which is it's a dynamic and you can put it in the game for lots of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, you know, this is the point of the conversation where it's sometimes helpful to look at different examples.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll talk about a couple of mine. So like there are a couple games that I've played that really felt grindy and had grind in them and felt grindy.
Yeah.
And there are a couple games that I wanted to bring up that had grind and didn't feel grindy. And there's actually one that I'm still playing that fits in both categories, which is perfect. So for me, Warframe is a game.
That game is super grindy. Oh, yes, my goodness.
Exactly. And lots of people say that, right? And
yeah,
some people find that really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
I personally didn't. I think it's partly because I didn't have a really great core group of people to play with.
Mm-hmm.
I had like my husband and a couple other friends, and they had more time to spend on it than I did. And so they quickly ground me out. I don't know. They got cooler stuff than I did.
Yeah.
Grinded.
Yeah.
Outground.
Outground.
Out. You. Mm-hmm. They got cooler stuff faster.
Yes.
In real time.
Yes.
Than I did. And so that felt bad. So I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So although Warframe is cool, I like the game. I like the whole, like, as a concept, I like the character, like the Warframes are cool, mm-hmm. and you look cool and mm-hmm. you can move in lots of different ways. But man, it is grindy and it felt grindy and it felt bad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's a debate whether that game has grind mechanics in it, right? It's got a grind dynamic for sure. The other one, and this is the one that I've been playing and talking about on the show a little bit, is Pokemon Quest.
Ah.
And it has definitely reached a point where I'm grinding.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because I'm like, I think I'm right at the end of the main game where there's this final boss. Spoiler alert, it's Mewtwo. It's always Mewtwo.
It's always Mewtwo.
Sometimes Gary comes back after Mewtwo.
Yeah.
Fight you again.
That's true.
That's rare.
The whole Gary. Thing.
Okay, I'm just going
to. We'll do Pokemon Part 2 another
day.
Okay.
Mark learns Pokemon Part 2.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. So it's the grindy part of the game. And up to this point, I have been able to just kind of like beat the levels and get the power stones and upgrade my Pokemon, just kind of as on this, everything kind of progressed at the same level. I was just playing the game. I was in the flow and I just was able to keep pace with my leveling up and my powering up just by playing through the game. But now I am at this point where I'm going back to previous levels just to level up my core team and get more power stones and get more levels on my guys and build more Pokemon soup so I can attract more Pokemon and then sacrifice those Pokemon to level up my main Pokemon.
Yikes.
Right. So there are all these grindy loops that are happening just so I can get enough power to beat Mewtwo. And the thing is that I already have gone up against Mewtwo enough that I know the strategy that will work. It's just I need my guys to hit harder and have more HP.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not a skill thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a stats thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that feels grindy to me. And it sometimes feels a little annoying.
Yeah. Right.
But also, like, it felt really annoying at first. And then as I started doing it more, I was like, it's going to feel really good when I finally beat Mewtwo.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to feel really good. And that brings me to the, you know, talking about games that maybe have those dynamics but don't feel grindy. However, before we flip that coin to the other side, I want to hear from you about games that you've tried that had grind dynamics and felt grindy. Like, talk a little bit about what felt grindy about that.
Okay, well, here's where I out myself as a Fortnite player.
It's okay, I'm here for you.
Mounting you too, Holly.
I know.
Because you called me out.
Yeah, a good, like, sidebar story is that people and my partner, people in her circle know your brother, who are now outing as well.
Yes.
And my she'll be like, oh, we play, and then she'll say we play Fortnite together, and then she'll stop and she'll not want to out Charles as a Fortnite player, like, in public, and she'll just be like, we play games a lot, like cool, like indies, real trendy. You wouldn't have heard of them.
Yeah.
Games that we play together.
Yeah,
it's like contentious, and it shouldn't be. It's a fun game.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, Fortnite has this. Like this, especially in this new season, they have this, basically you gain XP and you can go up levels and you get new stuff with these levels. The new season has it so like you get stars and you can purchase specific things you want to like get, like, and all of these things are skins, they're all cosmetics.
Yeah.
They don't impact gameplay at all, but I'm still.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, I don't know enough about playing Fortnite. Yeah. I only know about the business of Fortnite.
Oh, sure.
Like,
yeah.
But like, I don't know about playing it, but it seems to me that as a battle royale, you would want nothing that impacts the player ability.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That would break the game.
Yeah.
But like, there are other games that do out. That, but yeah, I would assume Fortnite wouldn't.
It does not.
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I've been, you know, playing this game because I really want this character. Her name is Dr. Sloan. She's the best character they've ever implemented into this game.
She's truly amazing.
She is truly amazing, and I want the skin so bad.
And it's quite far along.
Yeah.
If it was...
Can you pay for this skin?
You could, but no, okay. You can also get it for free. Well,
yeah,
free-ish.
Well, yes, and that's why I'm doing this stupid thing, is because I want the skin, but I don't want to pay. I have to earn it.
Yeah.
And earning it does we not mean spending $25.
$10.
$25?
I don't know if it's $25.
Okay.
It's an amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they price everything in funny bucks, so.
Yeah. V-Bucks.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Normally, in the normally, as in the last few seasons, I don't know how long back this goes. I'm a recent Fortnite convert. But, like, in the arc of the season, you just kind of unlock one thing at a time. So
yes.
You get some V-Bucks, you get a wallpaper, you get a weapon skin, and then you get, usually at the end of that block is a character skin, and then it resets.
Yeah.
And Sloan is pretty far along in the in, like, you would be playing for quite a long time before you got to Sloan.
Yeah.
But this season's mixed it up a little bit that you can kind of pick how you advance.
Yeah.
But it's still it doesn't make it super easy.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
Which is why we're doing a lot of the same things.
Right. And so, like, with Fortnite, a lot of it, like, you play the regular game where you drop on an island and you get killed by a bunch of people, a bunch of 12-year-olds, and you do it again and again.
They are
that's
all
the gameplay
12.
Loop is just get killed by 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah, never turn on voice chat if you want. You don't want to actually have it confirmed how young the people owning you are.
Right. But that game feels grinding because, like, other than, like, some of the quests, I guess, that you can do, missions that you can do, like, those give you extra XP, and that's my only goal really at this moment, is to get XP.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, you just, like, have to, you just play the game and hopefully you win, and then you get a little bit more XP than you would if you didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, you just keep doing that. So what keeps me coming back to that game is this, the social aspect of it. Really, I started playing Fortnite because Charles was playing it so much, and I was like, what the heck, Charles, I want to play games. So I started playing it. So this is his fault.
Uh-huh.
like most things.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Oh, comes back to
he'll come back. He'll come back in 10 episodes and say, no, it's not.
We'll put that on the calendar.
Right?
Defend yourself.
We know you're thinking, Charles. We'll have you anytime.
But yeah, like the social aspect, me playing it with other people, I don't play Fortnite by myself because like I just...
it's boring.
Nothing. Yeah. I don't find any enjoyment in that. So I just... I guess the enjoyment I get for like getting closer and closer to getting the skin and stuff is not enough to counteract the boringness of playing by myself. So if I play with other people, then I can do it. And then I force them to do these quests for me or with me.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me.
sometimes teams can contribute to one quest.
Yes. And so that is the aspect, I guess, that like gets me through it.
Yeah.
Not the grindiness of it.
Yeah, but it is grindy for it sure. Is.
Well, and it's interesting the way you describe it, because like the thing that makes it grindy in this case, the thing that makes it grindy in this case is the goal that you have chosen for yourself, right?
Yes.
This in-game goal.
Yeah.
And you're not actually, like, you're not mindfully focusing on improving your skill as you're playing. You are making that bar go up. Not.
Yes.
And that bar will go up no matter whether you win or lose.
Yep.
And so it's not really a challenge.
Yeah.
It's just you're putting in some time and you're doing the loop to make the bar go up.
Yes.
And that's what makes it grindy. Whereas someone who is like really wanted to beat those 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And be, I'll be better than them one day.
Right.
Right. Holly might want to. she'd be more mindfully practicing her skills in the game, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so she wouldn't care so much about the XP bar, or maybe she would. I don't know, play Fortnite. Apparently, I'm the only one at this table. I think Mark's lying.
Secret Fortnite.
Right. We're trying to keep it a secret.
I'm protesting too much.
Exactly. I'm on him.
Fortnite, what's that?
Look carefully for the signs, listeners. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, you'd be more focused on like your actual gameplay, and you'd be thinking about like, how did that match go? And, you know, what could I have done differently there? And that doesn't really sound like the experience you're having, Steven.
No. No. Yeah. That's how my brother plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, he like didn't know how to open match stats until very recently. And then I did. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't want that information. Close. Yeah.
He doesn't pay attention to the XP bar at all or any of the missions. He's just interested in getting better at the game.
So yeah.
I'm like, why? But
so we can carry our team
as
we all try to get better skins.
Yeah.
To be better than those 12-year-olds.
Right.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the game offers a path that where you can just ignore the grindy parts.
Yeah.
Or like you don't have to let that influence how you enjoy it or play it. Because I bounce off of that stuff very quickly. Like, I'm not against grind in games. And certainly, like, I don't mind. I think repetitive actions are perfectly, like, that can calm you. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Like, as a designer, I'm not frustrated by that their existence.
Yes.
But I have, it takes a rare one for me to, like, not immediately, like, see through it. You know, like, oh, you're just rewarding engagement. You just want me to play a little longer. Or it's like, or sometimes I'll be I'll play a game, I'll be rewarded with like a skin or something like that that I'm not interested in. And that alone, even though I wasn't going for it, will just turn me off the whole game. I'll be like, oh, that's how this, that's why, that's how you think I should be engaging.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not on the level you're on.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that Fortnite lets you kind of like choose.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't like Charles can leave that part alone. I mean, I'm kind of giving it a lot of credit here. I don't know how much to, but it sounds like you can. It doesn't, it's not in your face if you don't want it to be.
Yeah, you can. Like, I opted in because I spent money to buy this battle pass. I'm an addict. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I would. I was thinking of a game whose grinding felt really irritating to me, and it's the Borderlands series.
Ah,
okay. I haven't played that much of 3. That's circling back to ethical game consumption. Yeah, if you want to play a game, but you don't want to give them that much profits, wait until it's like 75% off.
Yeah.
Yep.
3 years later and be like, ooh, now I get to do it and I don't get to feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the at least Borderlands 2, and I don't really remember the first one that much. There's like pretty much every time you'd work through an environment and beat a boss, then a bunch of side quests would unlock that would have you work through that environment again.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm ready to move on now. I want to do something else. And they did, like, you'd get new dialogue and get to listen to new things, and the writing in the writing in Borderlands has always been pretty solid, but it wasn't enough to make it not feel like I was just replaying in the same area, killing the same enemies.
And a lot of open world games like that, a lot of Ubisoft games, like Assassin's Creed games, as they went on, they got the worlds became more complicated and rich and populated.
Yeah.
And I liked them less and less. Mm. Like, I kind of just wanted to go through them once, collect the five things.
Yeah.
Do the same three missions over and over, like side missions, and then be done with that section. Then, like, at a certain story point, suddenly, like, you can go back and there's 12 more things and there's, like, way more. And I'm like, I don't want any of that. I don't want the game to be more more detailed or rich or engaging.
Yeah.
I just want to, like, move on.
It almost feels like, I mean, if you have a limited budget, like, but a lot of time, or even just a limited budget, if you, like, you can buy one game,
yeah,
and that one, like, $60 title is going to be what you play for 6 months.
That's the point of those. Then it makes
games could, like, consume your life, and that's
right.
I mean, that's consumer friendly.
You get more out of it. But if you're like me and you're just kind of like zipping through every game that's on sale, then it's like, don't make me play this part again.
Right.
I just want to get to the end.
And that's really interesting, and maybe a good point to flip that coin over, because I think what really can make grind work as a dynamic is when it's actually kind of optional.
Yeah.
So, like, the games that we're describing are ones where more or less, like, what seems to work well is if you have a grind that's an option, but then you also have ways that you can, like, not do it so much. So, like, maybe some of these ways of skipping that grind are harmful or not what you want as a designer. I'm not sure, but, like, you can potentially just pay for the skin and get it, and you don't ride it. Now, of course, then you're missing out on that feeling of achievement of having, you know, put in the time.
Yeah.
The Pokemon Quest game that I have, like, you can buy packs to give you stuff, but they also give you, like, tickets that you can spend to get decorations that help you progress faster. So it doesn't let you skip the grind. It just lets you speed it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated when I said it out loud. Mm-hmm.
We can't go back to Holly's topic. there's a rich vein to be mined here.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, Crypt of the Necrodancer was one for me. Like, that's a roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
It's also dancing. And it's a roguelike, right? Like, the whole thing is grind. You are doing the same game over and over again.
Yeah.
But you are the thing that's fun about it is that you can alter the game world a little bit each time through, both in terms of you getting, you know, a better chance of getting better gear, but also, like, you can remove bad gear from the pool, so you're getting better gear, and you kind of, you know, it's a feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't feel grindy to me at all, possibly because I thought the soundtrack was so awesome.
That's a big part of it. That makes me think of, like, I mean, any roguelike or roguelite or dungeon crawler, like, you get your good soundtrack. You get, I mean, the example that everyone's been using for any good game for, like, a year now has been Hades. So you're doing the same thing over and over, but you're unlocking, like, more interesting writing, you're, like, you're meeting new characters, the game ends, and I think was among many people, I was like, no, and then they kind of, like, opened up the, like, infinite grind that you could be on. I was like, oh, good.
That's a game where the grind is essentially required. Because in order to get good enough to make it, you know, all the way.
Yeah.
You might want to do a couple of runs just to build up.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe, Ellen, I would disagree with you. I think the way that grind works best is when it's core to the gameplay. Because then there's a purpose to it. And maybe it's just because of the way I bounce off of games that have grind that I don't need to do, because I'm like, I see through it. It's like, I can beat the game at level 4. I don't need to get to level 16. You know, maybe it'll be a little harder, but, like, that's kind of what I want, like, or something. I kind of would rather a game, and I didn't love Hades. Like, I like a lot of its design, but as a player, I wasn't super into it.
Sure. Gasp.
I know. But I like the way that it approaches grind, which is it makes it core to the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ultimately, maybe all it really is fun. Like, if the grind is fun, who cares about anything else that it is?
Right. Yeah, right.
It's your Stardew Valleys. It's your I think there's something, like, I mean, this isn't your topic necessarily, but it's a very, like, psychological itch that it's scratching of, like, you're tackling a to-do list, and also it's like the only place where, like, a meritocracy is real. Like, if I work hard enough, I will get to a goal, and that's great.
Yeah,
and, like, that's not something that's reflected in your 9-to-5, probably.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's an honest day's, you know, grind. XP for an honest day's work.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I might have misspoken, because I don't I don't intend to like have an opinion or make a statement or a thesis that this kind of grind is good and you should use it this way. You know,
but it is easy. It is easy to pick a thing and then talk and then talk about why that's the best way to do it, and then pick another way it doesn't, talk about why that, because it is. It isn't. Yeah, it's easy to
super subjective.
Yeah, I think so.
It's really subjective. And the only, like, the main reason that I wanted to talk about this was, as I said at the beginning, you know, to understand my reaction to it a little bit more as a player, and this has helped. But you know, also to think about it from the designer perspective, like, there's just lots of ways you can use it. But what I've taken away from this is, if it's not, it just has to make, it has to be a meaningful grind, I guess. And for me, grinding out a new skin is not, I don't care enough. Mm-hmm. And some of your players won't. So you got to think about that. Like, who are your players?
I thought I was that person too, but.
But then you should really like it.
Well, it's why you define meaning, right? Ellen doesn't find it meaningful probably because you can buy it. And so therefore, there is no real accomplishment if you can just buy it. Yeah. Whereas Steven, you think it's an achievement because then you don't have to buy it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, those are both correct, right?
Yeah.
If I'm accurately describing each of your feelings about it.
Yeah, I recognize that, like, games where I enjoy that kind of grind is like, where the grinding is like, like, I'm playing the game in spite of the grind, or mm-hmm. like I was talking about with Fortnite, like, I play that because of the social aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nioh and Nioh 2, I play that game because I really like the gameplay mechanics, so I will keep playing that game even though, like, the weapons you get are just more powerful weapons of the same thing you already have.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the game enough to continue to play it, even past the point where, like, I've gotten all the levels done and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know, I guess it varies for everyone.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's just, you know, what do you want, and what do you want your range of players to be? I will never play a game if it feels like a chore.
Yeah.
If it starts feeling like a chore, I will be done.
Yeah.
Whereas my husband is like, okay, it's this time of day, it's time for me to do my dailies. Like, he like works it into his schedule, and it's this thing that he likes. He likes doing it, and I don't understand it, and that's fine. And that comes through not only in, like, his MMO playing, but, like, when he plays, like, RPGs on the highest difficulty, you know, like, his experience of the Mass Effect trilogy is different than mine, because I played it on normal, and I had a good time, and I didn't really do much grinding, because, you know, if I wanted to complete a quest all the way to the end, then I would do that, but it didn't feel like a grind, because it was meaningful every step of the way.
Right.
Whereas for him, like, I'm pretty sure he did get to points in the game where he had to grind both to get better gear and to improve his skill so he could progress for the particular build that he created for, you know, his heroic run through of the game. And because he wanted that extra difficulty, that choice also came with more grind.
Right. But it was meaningful.
But it was meaningful to him.
And he had some agency in choosing it. So it's kind of both.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
That's I started out of really nowhere this weekend. I started replaying Moonlighter, which I beat ages ago. Actually, no, that's not right. I never beat the final boss because it was just too hard. And I played it before I realized this time. I played it before on the recommended difficulty, which is hard. And this time I play on normal, and it's been nice to go back, because there's that first time I love the loop, and I was really excited about the grind, and it didn't matter how often I went to each dungeon and, like, came back and sold all my wares. So I was like, I love it. Like, I could be doing this for days. And now it's nice that I happened to reapproach it, knocked down the difficulty, and now I'm going to be able to beat it in a weekend and actually beat it this time, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is, it's nice that, yeah, that the grind, it became less like grinding the game and now more like grinding optional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting things to think about when it comes to grind. But I feel, I don't know, thank you all, because I feel like I understand what I like about grinding as a player and what I don't like about grinding as a player more than I did half an hour ago.
I'm gonna be overthinking it all the time, being like, can I add a 1 minute speech to the end of this episode? No, Holly, it was posted 2 years ago. But I have feelings about grind now.
Just tweet at us. Start with, to whom it may concern.
To your boss's boss's boss.
That's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and on our programming in general. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at Nice Games Club, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and potential job opportunities. Or you can email us through contact at nicegames.club. Want to support the show? There are so many ways. Give us a review on your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about your favorite episodes. Join us on Discord by visiting nicegames.club/discord. As a patron of the show, you'll get to enjoy bonus content, extra jokes, and more. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
I can't help you. I've taken the week off. Okay.
Okay. This one's Ellen. I don't know why I'm announcing it. I guess.
Thank you. And now Ellen.